Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. After years of relative peace, why has the Aleppo Front been reactivated? Is it Syria's turn again? Also, is a Trump peace plan for the Ukrainian conflict firming up? It would seem so. Are the Russians even interested at this point? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we have Dmitry Babich. He is deputy foreign editor at Komsomolskaya Pravda Daily. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's go to start this out with George in Budapest. Well, the Aleppo front has been reactivated, as I said in my introduction. This is like deja vu all over again, 2016. What's going on here, George? I mean, a ceasefire, or what they call a ceasefire, in Lebanon is established, and now we have a really quite impressive strike against Syrian forces. And considering how much effort, blood, and treasure Damascus used to regain Aleppo, it looks like, and I don't even, it's hard to tell, it's under threat, is it occupied? I mean, there's so many different reports out there at this point, I don't even know how to describe it, but this is massive. Damascus is on the back foot, and we all have a pretty good idea who's behind this. George.
Well, indeed, Peter, we have a pretty good idea because it's the same cast of characters that was behind the onslaught against Syria back in 2011 through to 2016. Without question, this was a shocking development, and it's clear that Israel is in the business of dealing with all of its adversaries at one and the same time. And I think Syria's vulnerability, I think, emerged because of what Israel had done in Lebanon to Hezbollah. I think Hezbollah has been a key player in the fight for survival of Bashar al-Assad. And Hezbollah is obviously very weakened. I mean, Israel has decapitated its leadership. It's clearly in disarray. So it won't be able to provide the kind of assistance that he had over all these years. Iran is also much weakened. So it also is unable to provide the assistance. And of course, we have Erdogan, who has always coveted Syria. This is, you know, he had pretended deviously, as is his wont, that he is somehow is in the business of seeking reconciliation with Assad. Again, there's nothing new in that. You know, at the start of his reign, he had promised good relations with Syria. He was good friends with Bashar al-Assad, but he has seized this opportunity to mount this onslaught. And I think it's very serious because I think the forces that had ensured the survival of the government in Damascus back in 2015, 2016, I think are now much weakened or preoccupied elsewhere. So rather pessimistic. I think that the outlook is not good for Bashar al-Assad.
You know, Dima, it's really quite interesting to me that a lot of the think tankers in Washington and London and looking at the conflict in Ukraine, been warning that the Russians might open up other fronts around the world, Yemen, Syria. No, it's just the opposite. This is an opportunity for the outgoing administration to mix up the works even more so. This obviously, there's a lot of scores to be settled because of the dirty proxy war of 2011 to 2016. Georgia's got that absolutely right. But there's always the element of an anti-Russian element to this coming from the West. And Israel is willing to play along if it suits its goals. So this is just as much against Moscow as it is against Damascus.
Well, I'm just stunned by the narrative which we hear from Washington and from Europe. Okay, a war has restarted. This is a huge misfortune. People are dying. Millions of people feel insecure now. And what's the narrative from the West? It's not a narrative of horror. It's calculation. You know, Assad's allies are weakened. Now is the moment. And no one is actually explaining what this HTS stands for. It's Khair al-Tahrir al-Sham, which is a terrorist organization. Al-Sham means for Syria. Tahrir is, you know, the same as that other terrorist organization, Hizbut Tahrir, you know, which is prohibited, I think, in the United States, by the way. So it's amazing. We have, again, this very strange, unholy alliance. Western powers and Israel ally themselves to Islamists trying to topple secular Arab regimes. This is really strange because that was Israel's narrative. You know, we are standing alone against the Islamist threat. We are protecting our people and we are protecting Western civilization. How come you are not protecting Western civilization in Syria? How come you basically provide services? You know, it was proven that Israel provided medical services to the Islamist groups. Well, actually, it brings to my mind a very, very interesting parallel. I would say a frightening parallel. You know, the State Department recently said that Ukraine was a bulwark of the Western world against Russia. Well, that was the narrative from before the war. In the 20s and in the 30s, the West talked about Poland as a bulwark against Bolshevism. And Hitler's Germany was seen as an ally for some time, again, as a bulwark against Soviet Russia. I don't want to idealize Stalin's Russia, but Hitler was certainly much worse. And here's what happened. Hitler attacked the West before he attacked Russia. So the bulwark turned against its main ally. In the same way, all these Islamist organizations, no one is disputing the fact that this is the same prohibited in Russia, Jabhat al-Nusra, you know, Khairo Tahrir al-Sham is the same as Jabhat al-Nusra, which declared itself a successor to Al-Qaeda. So
exactly.
This is a very strange ally.
Yes, Dima, you know, George, Dima is absolutely right. I mean, this is 31 flavors of Islamic terrorism, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you can change the uniforms, you can change the name. It's the same group of people committing the same atrocities. I'm not going to repeat it on this program, but some of the things that I've come across in the last few hours, it's the same people with the same devious, cruel behavior. And they're freedom fighters in all of this because it's against Assad, because it's against Iran, because it's against Hezbollah. They're not talking about their values right now, are they, George? Go ahead.
No, there is no values talk at all. And you're absolutely right. And of course, this was, we pointed this out so many times during the height of the war in Syria that, hey, whatever happened to this global war on terror? We're supposed to be fighting against this Islamic fundamentalism, this dangerous Islamist ideology. And yet the global war on terror continued to target the regimes that were themselves fighting against Islamist terrorism. So who was in the crosshairs? Well, Saddam Hussein, Bashar al-Assad, Muammar Gaddafi. Well, that's very strange. And of course, throughout it all is Russia and Iran, General Soleimani. So in other words, all of the people who are, you know, who are being targeted, attacked, sanctioned, assassinated by the West are actually fighting against Islamic fundamentalism. And who's fighting on our side? Well, wow, the Islamic fundamentalists. And so we've got the same thing here. We have Israel, which has continued to bomb Syria. Israel is still bombing Syria even as this offensive is being mounted. They're still doing it. And of course, Israel has played a major role in weakening the army of Syria, because again, the media are talking gleefully about how all the Syrian army is doing very poorly. It's been bombed nonstop, day after day after day, by Israel through all these years, ostensibly because it somehow is opposing some sort of an agent of Iran. And of course, it had an effect. And we should also not forget that throughout these years, the United States has maintained the most brutal, vicious, horrific sanctions. I mean, Syria has not been able to essentially just put itself back on its feet after more or less the end of the war in 2016, because the United States and the European Union really ratcheted up the sanctions to the point where Syria is unable to have access to its own oil resources, is unable to have access to its own agriculture. And then the West is sort of gleefully, oh, well, the Syrians are doing very poorly. Well, this is what happens when you do, when you apply this kind of pressure, bombing from Syria, Turkey maintaining and strengthening this terrorist base in Idlib, and then you turn around and say, whoa, well, that's surprising. Well, you know, why isn't Syria doing better than it is? Well, this is what happens. Syria is a weak, vulnerable country. And if you do that to Syria, then this is, will be the result.
And if... if the last few days are any indication, I'll throw this to Dima right now, is that then the there was no end to the proxy war. It's just been reignited. Because it's the same cast of players. You know, Dima, the one character that we all love to talk about because he's such a fascinating character, and it's Erdogan. I mean, Erdogan, all these overtures, rebuilding relations with Damascus. But once he sees an opportunity, and maybe this is a wink to the incoming Trump administration to get on have the good graces of the war hawks that Trump is going to bring on board. You know, he's showing his credentials that he's anti-Iran, he's anti-Syria. You know, there are many reasons why he may be doing what he is, but he obviously saw an opportunity, and he's arrayed himself with forces that he has openly been against or been rhetorically against, particularly since October 7th. So, and this is not going to do any good for Russian-Turkish relations whatsoever. Dima.
We'll see. You know, President Putin has been able to deal with Erdogan for a very simple reason. All the other partners are even worse. I mean, the West is openly hostile. So Erdogan, you know, treacherous as he is, dangerous as he is, he is still less hostile than the West.
He's an SOB, but he's our SOB, something like that?
Absolutely, absolutely. But the problem is that basically we have the same pattern of events repeating itself. I mean, remember 9/11. Who committed this crime? It must be Iran. It must be Saddam Hussein. No, it was Osama bin Laden. Is Osama bin Laden an Iraqi agent? No, he's your agent, former your agent in Afghanistan. And then these people say, oh, conspiracy theories. When they say that the United States raised its own enemies, you know, that terrorists bomb civilians, they're all former American agents. This is not true.
I have to jump in. We're going to go and break. But Christians in the Middle East continue to be killed. That's not reported in the West, too. I'm going to jump in here, gentlemen, and we're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. George, you and I have talked incessantly over the last few months, and particularly since the election of Donald Trump, his famous, I will end it in 24 hours, even before I'm inaugurated. Okay, that's the kind of the mantra here. Well, there's some indications of something is going on, okay? A ceasefire, maybe there's some kind of soft partition, a soft NATO entry. Lots of strange things coming from the strangest characters that we had hoped would not come back on the scene, but they are. They're back like a bad cold. What's going on here? Because the thing I find fascinating is, you know, this is this, it's almost kind of like inside baseball. You know, who says this? It's good fodder for podcasts, right? But are the Russians interested in this at all, George?
Well, it's very hard to know, I think, at this stage. I do think Russia will try to work with the newly incumbent President Trump to the greatest extent they can. I think they will have to. I don't think they can in any way just reject whatever plan that he comes up with. I think they will have to pretend that they're interested in working something out. And I think that was clearly indicated by the news conference in Astana, that Putin spoke very warmly about Trump, and even suggested, yeah, Trump really knows how to solve the problem in Ukraine. But fundamentally, I don't think Trump has anything really much to offer to Russia. He's brought back or brought in General Keith Kellogg, so this 80-year-old man who had been very hawkish pretty much from the start of this the so-called SMO since 2022. He's been complaining and complaining and complaining that the Biden administration wasn't doing enough. It wasn't providing enough arms to Ukraine, that it's not giving them enough to win this war. Now, he changed his tune somewhat during the past 12 months, in which he somehow started quibbling, you know, well, that maybe this isn't such a great idea. And then, you know, a few months ago, he penned an article with Fred Flights, which was in many ways confusing because it was something for everyone in this article. But there is at least the outline there of what could be a Trump peace plan, which is freeze the conflict in place, get everybody to the negotiating table, and we keep pouring in arms, by the millions, of tonnage into Ukraine. And at least, well, at least the war will have stopped. And basically,
that plan is that's not ending the war. Okay, that's a cessation of hostilities for a certain period of time. Dima, I'll throw the question to you. I mean, you know, all the bits and pieces that George has mentioned, and it's rife through the media right now. Why would the Russians even react to that? I mean, they want a solution to this crisis. They want security. Actually, Ukraine wants security. Actually, everybody wants security. But that's not the trajectory in which these so-called talks are going toward. Dima.
Keith Kellogg is a real neocon, you know. Russians have been mostly dealing with liberal neocons until recently. Now here is someone from the depths of American military machine talking. And it's just, absolutely immoral what he writes. I read his book, The War by Other Means, where he says that, I quote, "Obama was never a friend of Israel, but Obama tenderly loved Iran." Well, this is just pure lie. It's simply untrue, you know, because Obama threatened Iran.
It's not even good political poetry, okay?
No, it's, even if you lie, you have to do it in a way that would not be, don't let yourself be caught, you know, this is the political mantra. But his suggestion of peace to Russia is very Trumpist. I mean, like, we suggest that you sit at the table, that you stop fighting, and basically that you make concessions to Ukraine. If you don't make concessions, we expect, we will just leave the table. He's quoting Trump on that. So basically, he is a very impatient mediator. If he wants to be a mediator, well, mediators have to be patient. That's the first thing required from mediators. So this is not mediation. And I don't expect anything particularly good to come from this. However, we keep hoping. That's why Putin did not insult Trump and in general tries to kind of maintain some kind of polite relationship with him. That's why he said these things during his speech in Astana. Well, he said the same things about George Bush the Jr. It didn't mean that Russia somehow viewed George Bush the Jr. as a friend. We just, we tried to use every opportunity to avoid new wars. You know, Ukraine was an exception because diplomacy just didn't work there. You said Ukraine wanted security. The problem is that Ukrainian people want security, but Zelensky doesn't want it.
But you just mentioned the operative word here, George, is diplomacy. And diplomacy mostly it tends to look for a political solution. The characters that are around Trump, they haven't been confirmed yet, okay? But they tend to still think there's some kind of military solution. Then that's the danger here, okay? The Russians want a security solution. So, you know, given this mix, you know, it's going to have to be a very well calibrated balance of all of those things to move forward. Too many of these characters are in one category or the other. None of them are in diplomacy right now. Go ahead.
No, I think that's right. I mean, most of the people around him, including Keith Kellogg, are absolute hawks when it comes to Russia. They see Russia as an enemy, and they obviously still believe that Ukraine or Syria or whatever are useful weapons in order to weaken Russia. And so that's why they were, you know, none of them has in any way criticized Biden for what has happened in Syria. But Syria is a very good illustration of the axiom that you really don't want to leave unfinished business. And I think that's really been the weakness. Syria, essentially, there was unfinished business. And as long as there's unfinished business, then a war can start up again in 2, 3, 4, 5 years' time. And I think this will be the lesson to the Russians that, well, look, I mean, it wasn't finished. You know, there was Idlib, there was the American presence, there was Israel. It was going to start up again. And same in Ukraine. They had Minsk. Minsk was basically unfinished business. And it was inevitable that a war would start up again. So therefore, this proposal that that Kellogg has put forward and others have put forward, somehow, well, let's freeze it in place. We'll put the whole NATO membership on hold for the time being. But in the meantime, we're just going to pour in bucket loads of, you know, shells. And
George, that's what they did. But that's what they did from 2014 to 2022. That's exactly.
And to keep doing it. And well, then what's the plan here? Well, the plan obviously is, well, let's start it up again in 5, 6 years' time. And that's what they're calculating. You know, Putin is not going to be there forever. And then, well, you know, whoever's the next man in, we can just start it up again. And it's clear. It's clear if you know, just you look at these plans, where, you know, and there have been others of that nature, that they're just a way of, well, let's put things on hold for a time being. We'll strengthen our side, and then we're going to start it up again, exactly as what has happened in Syria.
Yeah, you know, Tima, because of the nature of the information infrastructure in the world, which is always very biased and mostly controlled by the West, the point of reference is always Trump's peace plan. But the Russians have had plans out there, proposals out there from day one, but they're never seriously looked at. But the Russians have to are demanded that they look at, you know, Trump's a neophyte in these areas. I don't think he knows very much about Ukraine. And you can always say he needs to delegate people. Well, he did, this Kellogg guy and other useful idiots of the foreign policy blob. But the Russian one is a good point of departure. But there's a denial that that is a point where everyone can start. And there's always the problem, what is Zelensky's role in this? He is no longer the legal president of Ukraine. You know, there's a lot of fundamental problems that haven't been addressed here, even if they wanted to take up the Russian plan. Go ahead, Dima.
Well, it depends on what you consider to be peace and what you consider to be unfinished business. You know, for the West, unfinished business is when the man whom they want to remove is still in power, you know. They wanted to remove Assad, you know. For them, even when fighting stopped in Syria, that was unfinished business because they will not stop until they remove him, right? And this is all very undemocratic. I mean, look at the elections everywhere in the world. Somehow the democratic West always supports one candidate, you know, and if that candidate doesn't win, they immediately challenge the result. You know, it's like a computer game. You, dear voter, you hit the wrong button. You hit the wrong button in Georgia. You hit the wrong button in Romania. Beware, you know, You're going to have problems if
well, you... Well, I mean, Dima, we're rapidly running out of time, but George, I mean, it is kind of... I'm glad Dima brought it up. It's a little off topic, but the Georgian president says she's not going to leave office. I mean, again, where are the democratic norms out there, okay? I mean, the people voted the wrong way, so I'm going to stay in the meantime. And it's applauded in the West. Go ahead, George.
That's right. The Georgian president just so simply announced, I'm staying on. You know, even though my term has expired, but I'm staying.
No, I thought Trump was going to do that.
And then, of course, in Romania, where the vote went the other way last week, the Romanian Supreme Court, I think, is scheduled to rule at any moment, essentially to annul the election. I mean, when you have an election, it's gone the wrong way. Basically, we're going to annul
it. Gentlemen, we haven't solved the Ukraine problem, but the West has its own problems with its vaunted democracy. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.